The agreement with the IRGC worth nothing. Iran will come against Israel. Iran may not be able to do it alone. That's why it will join a coalition. But it's clear to
those
me.
Those are your dots.
Yeah. Now, put those things aside. Now, wait a minute. Put those things aside and ask yourself now the whole thing about judgment. Okay?
Okay.
God is going to judge any nation that will come against Israel, especially in the tribulation. But you can tell that hurting the people of Israel and dividing the land of Israel is something God does not allow nations to do. Okay? So all nations will have to be brought down and be judged for that. America is not exempt from it. I think that as long as America was standing with Israel, America saw the good hand of God. I think that the rise of America to a superpower status is because of that. That's my opinion. You may not agree, but I think that ever since the British turned their back to the Jewish people, they went down. And ever since America tied its destiny with the people of Israel, it went up. And it's obvious to me that this connection is spiritual in nature, is biblical in nature, and when you cut it, there's always consequences. And as believers, we have to always pray for our leaders. As believers, we have to pray for our nation. And as believers, we want to do the right thing. And do not grow weary in doing good, for in due time you will reap. And so the Bible is clearly telling us, so we have to do the right thing ourselves. We have to pray for our leaders to do the right thing, and we have to pray for our nation to stay on course.
Well, welcome to Understanding the Times. So glad you can join me today, that little clip. But just to tease about one of the issues we're going to talk about in the next few minutes or so. And indeed, we've had a historic time with dealing with Iran. Isn't that kind of doing a deal with the devil? That's what a lot of leaders are saying. Others are saying that, this is a new opportunity and we can forge ahead with a new future. Let's remember that Iran is still going to come against Israel in the biblical battle of Gog and Magog. So what's up with Washington? Well, when I talk about that, I like to have one of your favorite guests in studio with me, and that would be my guest for the next few minutes anyway. And Michelle Bachman, by the way, welcome to Understanding the Times in our new studio here.
Thank you. Great to be in studio with you.
Michelle is a neighbor of mine. We are both here in the Islamic State of Minnesota, Islamic Republic. And Michelle, give me your perspective. No, a couple of perspectives. You served in Washington, and you've got some tremendous insights, and I'm going to get to those in a moment or two. But with what you just heard from Amir, and Amir is, again, obviously a warning, and you and I, over 15 years, talked about judgment on America based on how she treats Israel, Joel 3, etc., Genesis 12, 3, with what you've just heard, and building into that your perspective on this Iranian deal.
Well, and that's the question. Is America blessing Israel through this deal, or are we cursing Israel through this deal? Are we seeking to divide the land?
Yeah.
Are we seeking to scatter the people? That's the elements of Joel 3.
Yeah.
There's many verses in Scripture about the nations and what God expects of the nations regarding Israel. And this is a big one. I served in the United States Congress 11 years ago when the JCPOA was passed by the Democrats in the Senate.
One of the worst things ever.
It was terrible. And thank goodness it was Barack Obama's brainchild.
Yep.
And thank goodness President Trump overturned it. Now we have a new deal. And as you and I are here in the studio, the text has not been released. There's a lot of speculation about what will be in this deal, but we'll talk about what some of that speculation says.
Yeah, well, I'm hearing all sorts of things. Again, Joel Rosenberg, perhaps this is a deal with the devil. You've heard Amir. There are consequences when we come against Israel, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that something, it seems, changed with President Trump. And he's been Israel's friend since certainly his first term, well into his second term. He had a trip to China and he came back. He seemed to be a little bit different person after that trip to China. Am I imagining things, or do you think something could have happened there?
Well, we've seen, again, what we know from the outside is we've seen kind of two different perspectives from the president on Israel and dealing with Iran. And he has had a spectacular first year. I don't know if there's any parallel ever, any comparison to the first year of President Trump's second term. It's beyond brilliant. And he started very well in his second year of his second term. But somewhere along the way, he had done a brilliant job with Israel for several weeks in Iran. And it was literally miracles every hour happening in the takedown of Iran. And then all of a sudden, it's like a punch was pulled several weeks into the war, just like we saw happen with Hamas when Israel was winning. Israel was weeks from utter victory in Gaza. And then the United States pressured Israel to pull back its punch and essentially give up. And it was called a ceasefire, but it was essentially giving up. And now it's very strange. I don't understand it. It seems like maybe the same thing is repeating itself with Iran, because the United States and Israel were well on their way to defeating Iran. So why would you pull back when you're winning and when the enemy is losing, the enemy being Iran? So these are questions we're trying to get the answers
to. Well, you and I have talked privately, and we're asking, again, two influencers we know, and we talked about them many, many times on Understanding the Times Radio. How much influence? Jared Kushner, Steve Witkoff. We know they're, quite frankly, you know, they're businessmen first, politicians and negotiators, I think, second. And I think their vision is, you know, construction and how they might be building empires. Do you think this plays into things?
Well, we're not accusing them or anyone else within the administration of doing anything corrupt or having deals that are you might say, compromising them. But we know for a fact that they are involved in business deals with Qatar, the chief funder of terrorism in the world.
That's my concern.
With the United Arab Emirates, with the Saudis, the Saudi Arabians. So you've got actors that have acted against the United States of America. You have the actual negotiators in real-time business deals with these nations. It's probably not a good idea to have negotiators that at least have the appearance of being compromised. And so the question is, why? Why would the United States pressure Israel to pull back? Israel didn't want to pull back in Iran. They didn't want to pull back in Gaza. Not because they're bloodthirsty. Not because they are genocidal maniacs. Yeah. Because they aren't genocidal maniacs. Everybody needs to understand this. Israel has not committed genocide against the Palestinian. Okay. They are not committing genocide against the Iranians. What they want to do is be secure in their land. And so they're trying to keep them safe. That's why they're having to take on Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, because they're trying to secure their own interests. And the Prime Minister Netanyahu recently said that there is no security agreement for Israel that he sees in this agreement. So that takes us back to my first comment, which is, will this agreement have the United States blessing Israel?
Yeah,
or will this have us cursing Israel? Because if we're cursing Israel, we will be judged. If we're blessing, we will be judged. And so we want to be on the side of blessing because our lives will be dependent on whether or not America is blessed or cursed.
Exactly.
So that's why we have a personal interest in this as well.
Well, the president is making some statements that I think occasionally here anyway are somewhat troubling. He says Israel wouldn't exist without him. We know he's not a Bible student, but obviously Israel was brought back to life by God through the miracle, I think the miracle of all time.
And you have said this to me before, the greatest miracle that shows that the Bible is true is Israel becoming a nation in fulfillment of prophecy on May 14th, 1948. Yes. That's exactly true. I tell audiences all over the world that comment that you told me, that is probably the greatest proof text that the Bible is true.
He said that the deal with Iran completed, when it's completed, will bring peace and security to the whole region. Again, he's talking right out. He doesn't know it, I don't think. I mean, 1 Thessalonians 5 says, talks about peace and security. Of course, then sudden destruction will come. But anyway, he's making some statements that are I think, are quite alarming. But I think, Michelle, I think the real question that we need to ask is, I mean, we've got a deal or a pending deal. Who are we dealing with? Who's in charge of Iran? As I said, their original leaders are somewhere in a holding tank in Hades at this point because they were all killed. Who are we dealing with?
Well, this is like third or fourth generation of the leadership from when this first started, just months ago. So we're now going down the line because layers have been eliminated. And so we're told the gay Ayatollah, that's the son of the Ayatollah that was eliminated. But also, again, it's the Speaker of the Parliament. We don't know if he's in charge or if that's the person they're saying is in charge that they're doing the deal with. And it's never been the political leadership. So going all the way back to the last agreement with Iran in 2015, we didn't know who we were dealing with. We thought we were dealing with the political leadership. It was actually the Ayatollahs. The Ayatollahs call all the shots.
Okay.
The political leadership is window dressing. Think of it as that way. They want to pretend they're a real government. They aren't. They're a theocracy. So nothing has changed. It's the same today. So we're all told, oh, yeah, we're dealing with the Speaker of the Parliament, and that's Gabliev or something like that. We're not dealing with him. We're dealing with the gay Ayatollah or whoever the Ayatollahs are with him. The mullahs are making all the calls. That's the theocratic leadership. That's who we're dealing with.
I want to play one more clip of Amir because I think he's got such great insight into this. And here he's referring to, well, he's going to, again, bring up the issue of the war, Ezekiel 38, 39, Gog and Magog, if we could play clip one.
Okay, so when the Bible gives us things, it gives us dots or anchors. I call them anchors. Now, what is it exactly between? We don't know exactly. Well, you know, there's a war in Ukraine, there's a war in Korea, there's a war here. We don't know what's going to happen. But we know one thing. We know that this will happen and this will happen for this to happen. So, obviously, America will no longer stand by Israel. Obviously, America may not even be a superpower that can help Israel. And obviously, the evil regime in Iran will still stay there in power in order to come against Israel in the near future. And by the way, Winston Churchill wrote in, I think it was either August or September of 1938, he wrote to his good friend Lord Moyne that I have a bleak suspicion that we are about to have to choose between shame and war. And I think we're going to choose shame, and then war will be thrown at our doorpost in much more adverse terms. And I think America chose shame, because it's a shameful thing to deal with the IRGC, and war will come in a much more adverse terms, and that's the Ezekiel war.
Michelle, would you agree with what Amir just said?
Well, the setup has to be that all nations abandon Israel.
That's right, exactly. Zechariah 12.
The thought came to me as we've had all the discussions about this agreement that it isn't that when the war actually happens in Ezekiel 38 that all nations abandon Israel. I think the abandonment can happen before that. And so my question with this agreement is this agreement going to be how we abandon Israel? Maybe we're abandoning them now through this agreement, as opposed to when all of the horses and weapons are facing Israel in the mountains north of Israel.
Right.
That's my concern.
Okay.
And so that's why I think so many of us who read scripture, who are watchmen on the wall about what the times are that we're living in, I've wondered, is this the moment when the United States abandons Israel with this agreement? What a horror show that would be for the United States of America. That's why this matters. And this isn't about rejecting President Trump or betraying President Trump. our fidelity is to the Lord and to the Bible.
And to the Bible.
And so we want to stand strong on the Bible. And the kindest thing we could do to President Trump is warn him, don't go there. Don't make a mistake where the Bible is not going to be at the center front of this decision, because the Bible is very clear about how nations are judged.
Okay, then where are his Christian advisors? And he has many. And some are quite, I think they're quite biblically astute. Paula White, I'm not quite sure she understands particularly eschatology, Bible prophecy, but he's got others by his side who do. Are they silent? Are they afraid?
Well, the inner workings, I've sat on the president's council
before,
but it was a bit more honorific, I would say. Okay. There are some members who probably have closer relationships, in fact, phone number exchanges, mm-hmm. where they could say something. The question is, do they feel that they can pick up the phone and call the president? Would the president receive what they say? Mm. We don't know what the priorities are for the president. Is he concerned about the biblical aspect, or is he concerned about other aspects that he's trying to solve? So right now, we know the midterms are at hand. We know the price of oil is a real concern. There are deals that private people make as well. We don't know what everything is that's coming together in this. But our concern is following the Bible. And this is something that has been true for millennia, for ancients, and so from the time of ancient days, these scriptures have stood strong. But they've also proven to be true.
Yeah.
You look in the Bible, all the nations that came against Israel, they don't exist anymore.
That's
I take
right.
that as a very strong warning
That's
to
exactly
the United
right.
States. God is no respecter of persons. He's no respecter of nations. And so just like he judges Israel, he will judge the United States of America. He judges Israel for how Israel treated Israel and treated the covenant. And so we will be treated no differently. And so that's why I'm very concerned. I wish I knew all the terms of this agreement right now. But if this is an agreement that will be a good thing for Israel and a blessing for Israel, then the United States is going to stand in a very good place. But if we have built upon a house of sand an agreement that will ultimately lead to Israel's detriment, then we're going to have to pay a price for that.
Well, I hope he's listening to voices like Mike Huckabee, for example.
He's the best voice I know of.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to say, I love Mike Huckabee, Ambassador Huckabee. We couldn't have a better ambassador right now. He's fabulous. But I don't know how much he's being listened to, just like I don't know how much Secretary of State Rubio is being listened to. Will it be isolationist voices? Vice President J.D. Vance hasn't seemed like he's necessarily been Israel's best friend or
That's
in their corner. He's taken a rather extreme view of America first. Although he's been a very good vice president, he's done, I'm not here to criticize him. He's tried to do, I think, what the president wants him to do. But as far as advice goes, what advice is getting to the president's ear? I don't know how strong the biblical advice is. And really, the only thing the president can't get wrong is Israel. The one thing a president cannot get wrong is Israel.
We said that first term.
Yes, we did. And we have said it on your many of your private or previous radio shows. It's the only thing the president can't get wrong. It's real easy. Don't divide the land. Don't scatter the Jewish people from the land. And just think in terms of the calculus. Will this decision be a blessing to Israel or will it be a curse? And really, a great hallmark would be, what are the Israeli people saying about the decision? And the Israeli people, not just Prime Minister Netanyahu, but the Israeli people have been saying, wait a minute. We don't think this agreement is going to be good for us. We think this is going to be a nuclear weapon for Iran. Yeah. What about the ballistic missiles? What about all of the Iranian proxies who are firing at Israel? You're not taking that into account. I would really be, if I was President of the United States, I would be listening to what Israel is saying right now. They're a pretty darn good indicator that, time out, this may not be good for us. Yeah. If that's the case, then America will not be blessed. So all these 401k accounts that have been magically rising, they may crash
and
burn and fall. And so we need to recognize God is sovereign. God is sovereign. The God of the Bible, the God of the universe, the God of Israel, he will have the final say.
Well, you made a reference, wish you were president of the United States. You tried in 2012, and Washington has changed over 20 years. I want to play another clip here, and I want to come back and get your perspective, because here Scott Jennings, clip number 3, is commenting on, the new left, and you and I were talking off air about the new left, and my goodness, you know, at one time there were some moderate Democrats. They certainly were making sense at the time. They vanished off the scene. Let me play this quick clip and come back and talk about it.
Here is something that you must understand about the left. They hate success. They hate it when people make it on their own. They hate it when you don't need them. Think about what they teach our kids, that America was founded on racism, that our country is rotten at its core, that capitalism is evil, that hard work is for suckers, that merit is a dirty word, that the nuclear family is oppressive, especially to women, that faith is for idiots and rubes, for people who are from Kentucky and Texas. They run people for the United States Senate who think there are 6 genders and that we can solve the climate crisis by taking away all of your bacon. Is it any wonder that Charlie spent his life on college campuses trying to reach young people? He saw what was happening. I think when that shooter pulled the trigger and killed my friend in Utah, he thought he was ending a movement. He thought if he killed Charlie Kirk, he could kill what Charlie stood for. That the rest of us would get the message, that we would heed the warning, silence yourselves, or we will do it for you. I think that's what he thought. Certainly what the people who cheered on the assassination thought. And make no mistake, there were thousands who cheered it on. But in trying to silence one voice, I think they created thousands. In trying to end a conversation that day, I think they started millions. And that is the thing we learned about faith and freedom. You can't kill them. You can try to suppress it and you can try to silence it, but it always finds a way, like water finding cracks in a dam.
Now, you ran for president in 2012, and as you just heard Scott Jennings outline the new left today, mm-hmm. could you have pictured, 2012 is not ancient history, mm-hmm. the change between then in 2026, the new climate in Washington on the left, could you envision it back then, what it's looking like today?
No, the Obama presidency changed everything.
Yes.
Turned the United States of America upside down. And then Barack Obama got to live his fantasies out through the Biden presidency.
Yes.
Because remember, he famously said what he really wishes, that he could sit in a basement somewhere and pull the strings and
not have
to be president. So whether he did that or not, we can't prove it. But Joe Biden certainly wasn't pulling the strings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so somebody was, but what we saw was a nation we no longer recognize. So now, during Obama's term, he had Obamacare, and that's what wiped out all the moderate Democrats, yeah. because there were about 30 pro-life Democrats, and they voted for Obamacare, which gave us taxpayer-funded yeah. abortions. So the voters said, what? I thought you told me you were pro-life, and you voted for this? So they sent all of those yeah. Democrats packing. Today, they're all lunatic left. Everybody yeah. is an AOC. It isn't just AOC as an aberration
yeah.
or Ilhan Omar as an aberration.
Yeah.
They all vote the same with
That's right.
AOC and with Ilhan Omar. So there is no moderate Democrat left anymore, meaning there's no pro-Israel Democrat anymore, other than like John Fetterman in yep. the Senate. And I mean that sincerely. He's the only Senate Democrat left who's pro-Israel. So, for instance, when I was in Congress serving with Nancy Pelosi, who was Speaker of the House, we agreed completely on Israel. We were all pro-Israel. Republicans were pro-Israel. Democrats were pro-Israel. You couldn't find an anti-Israel under other than Betty McCollum of Minnesota, and she was a precursor to Ilhan Omar. So there were a couple out there, But they were the aberration. They were not the norm. The norm was America was pro-Israel. Churches were pro-Israel. Yeah. People on the street were pro-Israel. I've never seen anything turn as quickly as I've seen people and churches and young people and politicians turn against Israel. That is a phenomenon that we never could have even predicted.
Well, I have seen in my lifetime the pulpit change. And I think that's partly at play here. The pulpit is quite silent on what we're talking about. The pulpit doesn't take a stand. October 7th happened, 2023. And October 8th, you would think the churches would have gathered for prayer, for some kind of unity in favor of Israel. Emails told me their church, any denomination, you name it, was silent October 8th, 2023. And so I think because the pulpits are silent, the people are confused. That's one reason this ministry continues. Yes. That's one reason you keep speaking out. That's one reason Amir, Jack Hibbs, and others continue to speak out to sort of compensate for what the pulpit's not saying.
Well, that's true, and we need to have the church speak out, but we also need to recognize that this didn't just happen. This was intentional. So October 7th happened, and already the signs and the garb and the protests, they were already pre-planned. They were ready to drop. It was like plug and play. And so out at the in front of the White House that night, there were people with red cans of paint, and they took their hands, and all over the beautiful white brick pillars in front of the White House, there were red handprints to show blood. Blood from who? Not of Israeli blood, but to lie and say Israelis had killed Gazans. What? No Israeli had killed any Gazan other than self-defense. So this was an absolute unmitigated lie. We're living with that lie today, over 2.5 years later. It's unbelievable what we're living through.
I'm going to pick up on that. I'm just backing up just a moment or two here because, you know, we were talking about the rise of the hard left here. And here's where it culminated in recent time, in recent months anyway. And I don't think anyone was prepared for New York City to elect a Muslim Marxist mayor, the largest city in America, one of the most influential in the whole world. Some people say, well, that's Babylon. I don't believe that. But nonetheless, huge, hugely important city. Zohran Mamdani elected mayor. I never thought I'd see the day. A city filled with Jews, by the way.
Right, because A, he's an avowed Marxist.
Yes.
There's no question he's an avowed Marxist and unapologetic about it. And he's an avowed Islamist.
Yeah.
This guy is he wants to see Sharia law become the law of the land. This is who we have in that office. And he had no background, no experience, hadn't held jobs where he had produced anything.
Ever.
So you have an incompetent. You have somebody who's actually pretty ignorant. Somebody has to write his speeches for him. And he's an Islamist and a Marxist. How could that happen? Well, this is how it happened. New York City is 40% immigrants. 40% immigrants. And so the vote is suppressed because normal people say, well, gee, they're going to elect a Democrat anyway. Why bother to vote? And so because of the apathy, the rich apathy, and then the get out the vote effort among the Muslim world, I'll give you another example. Okay. In Frisco, Texas, 90% of all Muslims voted. Only about 20-some percent of Christians voted. So now think of this. This is why this is happening. And so when the pulpits don't care about elections, when the pulpits don't care about talking about the issues, Christians say, hey, I guess it's not important. I guess I don't need to vote. I guess I'll just pray and trust God, and that'll be the end of it. It's faith plus action. And so that's what's really gotten sad, that when the pulpits are silent. Let me tell you, they weren't silent 250 years ago.
That's right.
The pulpits had election sermons. They were aflame.
Right.
No pastor was afraid of talking about issues, that they were going to somehow offend their congregants. They weren't trying to be political. They were being biblical. It was survival.
Yeah.
Was America going to survive? And so the pastors knew that they had to equip the people in their pews on what the Bible said about issues. You had the most biblical literate congregants ever probably in the history history of the world. And so they naturally saw voting as just a normal part of life. It wasn't an aberration. It wasn't political. They were being biblical when they went into the voting booth. That's what was forgotten in New York City. That's what's being forgotten all across America. And we can lose this country in the midterms in the fall if Christians don't vote and acquaint themselves with what the Bible says about the issues.
I'm going to say it. The question is America going to survive again? I think we can ask that again. I'm going to play one more clip. It happens to be of you. And this is, you're having a fascinating, folks, you can find this on YouTube, more extended conversation with, of all people, Dr. Phil.
And he's a good guy.
And
very
I appreciated
pro-Israel.
How seriously he takes this topic.
Yes.
And I watched him during the interview, and his face registered just very serious concern. Mm-hmm. Let's play this clip and then come back and talk about it.
And if there's anything that history has shown us, it's that when anti-Semitism becomes normalized in a society, that's a clear warning sign that there's a terrible problem happening. We've seen anti-Semitism rise up on the political left, on the liberal side, and it's been embraced and normalized. And now, tragically, we're seeing that on the right, and it's happened faster than I could have possibly imagined. So when we see this happening in our own camp, I'm a conservative, I saw it happening in my own camp, we have to repudiate it. We have to say we don't tolerate this. We will not allow the hatred of Jews that leads to violence and even to death. We won't allow that on our side.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask you to help me out here because I have, as you probably know, have taken a very strong stand against this anti-Semitic rhetoric and behavior. And I have to say, I've been in shock about this. I have heard and seen things happening across America and certainly on our campuses where you would think that we have our brightest minds being shaped. And I am seeing and hearing things that I never in my lifetime thought I would hear in America. Never thought I would hear these things.
That's right.
And I certainly never thought I would hear the leadership of our elite universities actually not just tolerating, but supporting this kind of conduct and brokering this kind of absence of critical thinking. Where is this coming from? How did we lose our way so badly?
Well, it's a breakdown of morality and a breakdown of decency within the society. One of the oldest hatreds in the world is the hatred of Jews. We've seen that throughout cultures, throughout time periods. But here in the United States, while it's happened, it hasn't been on this level. And I can tell you, I served in the United States Congress when I was there. We had our disagreements just as they have today. But the one area of agreement was on Israel and the Jews. I could talk to Nancy Pelosi, who was on the left. I was on the right. I could talk to her or any of my other colleagues about Israel. We were all on the same page that we were supportive of Israel. I left Congress in 2015. And what I have seen in the last 2 years has shocked me. My Democrat colleagues, they weren't just Jewish colleagues. They were from whatever persuasion, but they were pro-Israel. But now we've seen something completely different. The left has completely disassociated them with Israel and with the Jewish people. And they've now embraced an anti-Semitism that we saw culminate in the election of the New York City mayor, Mondami.
So again, Michelle, you outlined that so perfectly. I mean, this phenomenon, again, October 8th, you would think the world would have gravitated with concern, sympathy for Israel. They had sympathy for the devil. They were cheering for Hamas after October 7th. I mean, the world, and in some cases, the church. And this new rise of 1930s-like hatred for the Jews. I'm sorry, I've been in ministry a number of years. I've not seen anything like I've seen since October 7th.
Well, if I could say, this isn't anything Israel did. This is a manufactured controversy. We know, for instance, that Qatar has spent over $100 billion targeting specifically young Christian conservative kids. So college-age students, if you're, you know, 45 years down to, let's say, 15 years, they've been targeted. How? Qatar has spent money to buy up media newsrooms. They've bought influencers. Who knows? Tucker Carlson denies he's been bought. Something happened to him. $100 billion goes a long way.
That's right.
They also bought up college campuses. They've been buying up Middle East studies programs and shoving billions of dollars into these universities in order to get their Islamic point of view and to teach hatred. It isn't, gee, we love Islam. It's, gee, we hate Jews. Yeah. And so this has been a complete intentional effort. And don't think that advertising doesn't sway people. What do you have Madison Avenue for? That's what this is about. And so the Islamists have used all of this oil and gas money to turn our kids against the Bible and against what we believe and against Israel. And so they know. The greatest friend Israel has is evangelical Christians.
Yes,
we are the strongest power base that gets Republicans elected. And so if they can turn evangelicals away from Israel, game over.
Game over.
Then the Islamists win. So we've got to smarten up. We got to wise up. We got to smarten up. We got to realize we're being played. Our kids are being played. I was just asked last week to speak down at Charlie Kirk's Women's Summit in San Antonio, Texas. And I told all the young girls that were gathered there, you are the target for Qatar. You're the ones on your social media. And they all agreed. Yeah. Yeah. They all agreed. It's about it's about 40 I hate Israel messages for every positive message. And so afterwards, after I was done speaking, I can't tell you how many girls came up to me and said, oh, that clarifies things for me. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't understand that. Thank you for telling me. They've only been getting one side of the story. Yeah. They're getting the hate Jews story, the lie story, and that lie story is being paid for by the chief funder of terrorism in the world, Qatar, together with other Arab nations who are in league with Iran. So the chief sponsor of terrorism in the world, Iran, is in league with the chief funder of terrorism in the world, Qatar. Well, Shazam, why wouldn't we think that they would figure out who's the biggest threat? Young evangelicals. Yeah. So let's pull them over to our side to believe like we do. Let's tell them enough lies. The church won't tell them enough truth.
That's right.
And so now they're going to start believing the lies. I'm telling you, this is the biggest issue that we have to deal with. And that's why we might talk about this in a few minutes, but I've changed direction in what I'm doing right now.
Yes.
I was the dean of the government school at Regent University, and now I'm moving away from that full-time into the Israel Institute, because what we see, whether it's through Christian Broadcasting Network or Regent University, we are losing. We haven't hit bottom yet. We're losing our young people in terms of believing the Bible, thinking that what the Bible says is true, that we need to stand with Israel and support Israel. We're losing an entire generation. Yeah. So we are dedicating our efforts full-time to get to this generation with biblical truth, to pull them back so that they don't become captives to the lie and captives to propaganda paid for by the biggest haters of Israel that there is. So we want to bring this generation in, because how will they view the other truths and promises of the Bible if they reject the chief central promise, which is the covenant of God? And what's the covenant? That God chose a people group, the Jews, and put them in a land called Israel to be a blessing to all nations on earth, so that we can be redeemed and come into right relationship through the Holy God, because he gave us a Jewish Messiah.
Amen.
And with Jewish disciples, and then shared that with all Gentiles on the earth, who then gave their lives to Jesus Christ. This is a beautiful message of freedom. And so Satan, rightly, is trying to snatch from this generation the message of truth and life and of coming to Jesus Christ. That's why we're sitting here talking today. We don't want to lose that generation. So Michelle Bachman, I'm at Regent University. So regent.edu/Israel. It's very simple.
Give
regent.edu/Israel. Israel. And then you can find me, you can find the Israel Institute, and what we're trying to do. Our focus isn't just young people, but that is our main target. It's really for churches, for homeschoolers, for everyone. We want materials readily available, and we are active. Just as the Qataris are active, yes, about stealing our kids, we're active about keeping our introducing our kids to Jesus Christ and to letting them know you can trust the Bible. You can trust the God of the universe, the Amen. God of Israel. You can trust him and listen to his word and follow it.
I think we ought to give a little caution here, Michelle, in the closing minutes that we have, because you and I, again, we're residents here of Minnesota, which is a challenge. I often say I live on Mogadishu on the Mississippi, because we've had an influx in Minnesota since the 90s of about 100,000 Muslims, and how that's changed the lifestyle of Minnesota. It's changed the face of Minnesota. And I think this is probably intent, at least of the left, is to Islamicize much of America. The consequences here in our state are staggering, not the least of which is a governor who, you know, kind of almost became vice president of the United States. So tell me your observations, because you're a lifelong resident here. I am too. And what I see of Minnesota, I don't recognize, at least from my youth. And I know you feel the same way. But we're doing this here as a warning to the rest of the country.
Well, Minnesota is one of the greatest states to live in. Even though we're cold, it was one of the greatest states. We had the highest productivity. We had the highest academic standards. We have Mayo Clinic, the greatest medicine in the whole country. So we were a success story. America's success story was Minnesota. We had very low welfare use. Then Bill Clinton dropped all of these Somalis into Minnesota. We've had to deal with them, and we've been the epicenter of fraud in the United States. When it comes to all of the Muslim fraud and piracy in Minnesota, it's still going on today as you and I are sitting here. The fraud and the piracy, the theft is still going on. And now in some cases, it's being legalized. And so our state has gone from absolute pinnacle of success to pinnacle of failure. We were number one in academics. Now maybe 20% of kids can even read at grade level. So the politicians in this state have amassed coalitions and put coalitions together. And these are coalitions that are dependent upon tax money. So the Democrats are at the middle. We haven't had a Republican elected statewide in Minnesota for 20 years. And so they're in the middle, and they've got their different coalition groups that they use our money that they take from us to pay all these people off and then to pay off the bureaucracy. And so it's really, it's like an Al Capone gang. That's what it is. It's like a legalized criminal enterprise. That's an oxymoron if there ever was one. But it is destroying the United States of America. We saw it early on here in Minnesota. You're seeing it now in New York City. But this is the plan for every city.
It's the plan for every city.
Bring every major metropolitan area down. It's like tent poles of these major metropolitan areas. And then you pull the whole country down. Why would anybody do this? Well, because the Chinese communists hate America. Yeah. They want us brought down. And the Chinese communists were big friends of Tim Walz, our governor.
That's right.
But also the Islamists want to take us down. So they, our enemies want us destroyed. They're destroying us from the inside. And the strength of America was always the Bible. Minnesota was the epicenter of a Christianity. We had Bible societies. We had Billy Graham headquartered here. We had Bible publishing headquartered here. No longer. All of these headquarters are gone now out of the state of Minnesota. But at one time, that's who we were. And with it, we've seen the entire state drop. So you and I are parakeets in a coal mine telling all of you, warning, warning, because this is coming if we don't intentionally push back. Yeah. That's why I'm pushing back. We believe in the power of prayer.
Yes.
On your program, we have promoted every day, every year, 40 days of prayer and fasting. We follow the Jewish calendar. which is called Teshuvah. So we'll start that again in August. It ends on Yom Kippur. So you can join us. Many of you have joined us before, but you can go to regent.edu/Israel, and we'll have a site for you to sign up there. If you signed up before, we've already got your email. We'll let you know, and you can join us again. But this, I have seen miracles every year, Jan.
Yes, I know you have.
40 days of prayer and fasting. And so I invite everyone, please, if there was ever a time to join, it is this year. Our country really is on a knife's edge. And I was just in Israel just earlier this month for a time of prayer in Jerusalem. And I went to the wall to pray about this Iran agreement, what you and I are discussing right now. And my whole message is that we are on a knife's edge. America could abandon Israel now. Just as scripture says, the whole world abandons Israel for Ezekiel 38.
Yeah.
This may be America's moment when we abandon Israel. I pray it is not. And so I invite everyone to join us at regent.edu/Israel, and all the details will be there. Check back later if we don't have details up now. Check in a month or so. But regent.edu/Israel, and then we will do the most positive thing that we can do, and that is pray. Pray for 40 days of prayer and fasting. Jesus did, John the Baptist, all the prophets prayed during these 40 days. And when we pray, we are praying to the God of Israel, and He hears our prayers, and He answers, and He will hear us again.
Our summer magazine is out. Folks, if you'd be interested, go to the website, olivetreeviews.org, Understanding the Times, 4 or 5 times a year. It's absolutely free. Michelle, thank you for your insights today. They've been so helpful. And I think, you know, we've talked about discouraging things, and I'm so glad you ended on an encouraging note, because that's what people need. We're in such trying times. You look at the news at night, and sometimes I just have to turn it off because it's just so overwhelming. So the 40 days of prayer and fasting, God bless you for doing that. And we announced that on my radio program, I think.
You did. You were the first
5
one.
Years, I think.
Yeah, five years ago.
Okay.
And it's unbelievable. And out of that was birthed our PhD program in government. The Israel Institute was birthed out of that. So many other things. I you know, we've been praying through elections and other things.
Yes.
And God has delivered miracles that we couldn't have possibly imagined. So again, we have faith, the seed of a mustard seed. We're a Gideon-sized army. That's exactly what we want to be, because we serve the greatest God of the universe. There is only one God. All the others are false.
Say, folks, I want to encourage you as we close here. I want you to look back and thank Him. Look ahead, trust Him, look around and serve Him. But always look up and expect Him. He's coming again sooner rather than later. We'll talk to you again next time on Understanding the Times.